Greetings and salutations, everyone. This is AC2GS. My name is Roy, and this is the Limark Technical Net. Limark Technical Net has been going strong for 40 years, and every Sunday night at 8 p.m., we do it all over again, and you're welcome to join us, as I hope many, many people have. Again, let me drop, and I will tell you the usual links to be aware of. Okay, if you need to reach me, you can't do it via the radio because I'm not on the radio or you are not in the radio distance, then email is the choice. The email address will follow, but the point is if you have mailbag questions, in the old days we used to get a load of those, people who couldn't contact the repeater but had a question and were listening in, so that's a mailbag question. If you have a topic for discussion, now, again, it could be something that you would like to discuss. It could also be something you want to discuss with others, or that you might just want to hear discussed by others and remain quiet and take notes. Or if you have any puzzles, I'm always looking for puzzles. I have a few tonight. If I have the time and opportunity, I look forward to trying them out on you guys and gals. Or if you would like me to tap Paul on the shoulder and ask him to take a look at a space-related or NASA-related story, my email address is mailbag@ac2gs.com. Again, mailbag@ac2gs.com. And Paul's is spacenetreports@gmail.com. I have a link page with all kinds of interesting articles. Peruse them at your leisure. They're available 24/7. Some of the images have to do with the puzzle question for tonight. And that's available by typing into your browser, roy.ac2gs.com. And we have a chat room available. Just type into your browser, chat.ac2gs.com, and that'll bring you to the chat room. We offer an audio stream of the Technical Net, as well as the Glen Oaks repeater 24/7. That's available if you type into your browser, technet.ac2gs.com. And always keep in mind that MikeKC2NJI has a great archive site of Limark Technical Nets that go as far back as September of 2006. That site is called amateurradio.tv. He has over a million visitors, so make it a million and one. Anyway, I will drop and I will tell you my plans for tonight. Okay. It's going to be a regular night. I will ask for questions. I would prefer questions or short comments of an amateur radio technology nature at first. As time goes on, we'll have time for longer presentations or discussions, and non-amateur radio technology will cover any science that you're interested in, and even medicine. Just keep in mind that we do not treat nor diagnose on the radio. But if you want to bring up the subject, we'll see what we can do for you. So we'll be doing that, and if and when I have the opportunity, I have one or two puzzles that I might drop for people's amusement, and we'll see how that goes. That should take us, hopefully, to 10:15. Paul, WS2N, will give us the SpaceNet report. And that'll take us to 11 p.m. I'll return and wish everyone well and call it a night. And that's the plan, assuming that the powers of nature allow me to do it, propagation, radios, electronics, all manner of things that could get in the way. So with that in mind, please, and for the people who have a very, very short time with us here on the Technical Net, please try to be one of the first few people to check in or give me some kind of indication that you're in a hurry and you can't just wait until your turn is. But it's always best to try and be quick on the button. So with all that in mind, anyone with any questions or topics or comments for tonight, please give me your first name and your call sign. Well, the silence is deafening. Once again, I am AC2GS. My name is Roy, and this is the Limark Technical Net. And we kind of run on the power of questions or comments or topics. Without those, not much to go on. So with that in mind, once again, If anyone out there has any questions or comments or topics, please give me your first name and your call sign.
KG2VHD. Good evening, Roy.
Hey, John. Good evening, Roy.
Jim, recognize. John, you have a question or a topic for tonight, or are you just kind of checking in?
I'm checking in for now. Thinking of asking a question about hex beam versus step IR, but I don't think I'm prepared enough yet with my base knowledge.
Okay, I leave it up to you. You don't have to be able to discuss every aspect of the technology. You know, we could discuss the broad strokes, and you could always come back later if and when you have other points that you want to bring up, but I'll leave it up to you. Anyone else want to put their name down on the list for any questions or topics or comments? Please hit that push to talk button, give me your first name and your call sign.
Katie, was just listening, Roy. WA1YYQ, Dan.
Dan, do you have a question or a comment for tonight, or are you just checking in?
Hi, Roy. Good evening, everybody. You know, I just wanted to give a comment and an update on those mats that I put in the trunk of my car for HF. If you recall, I have the carbon fiber trunk and hood and panels and whatever, and I put those MATs in the car, and it's working like a charm, and I have the aluminum foil underneath it, and just to refresh your memory, I was having trouble getting a ground plane on the car and found out that the car was mostly made of that fiber, so just one carbon fiber. So I just want to give you an update, Roy. It's working great. If anybody needs any help with that, I'd be happy to help them. It's WA1YYQ.
Okay, very good, Dan. I'm glad you solved your problem. Yeah, I've kind of heard that through the years questions about, usually people discuss boats and such, because they're usually made out of fiberglass products that don't really supply a good ground facility. Fortunately, they're sitting on salty water most of the time, so that lets them get away with a lot of things. But it's good that you found that solution and it works for you. Anyone else with any questions or comments that would like to put their name on the list tonight, please hit that push to talk, give me your first name and your call sign. Okay, might be a quiet, short night. Jim, KD2VHD, what's your comment or request tonight?
I have a very straightforward question tonight. No troubles. On the topic of switching power supplies for running ham radio, what's the significance of a switching power supply versus something that's not labeled that for radio use? I need a little education on it. It doesn't seem to be out there.
Sure. There are basically two types of power supplies. The old type are sometimes called linear. And they've been designed pretty much the same way for decades upon decades. What they amount to is you got a power transformer that steps down the voltage to something above 12 volts, because you need a little bit extra volts to play with, puts it through a bridge rectifier, puts it through some smoothing capacitors, puts it through some power transistors and voltage regulation circuits so that they stay within a spec. Sometimes they throw in an adjustment knob so that you can tweak the voltage levels, you know, at different points. And that is a linear amplifier. A lot of old-timers love them. They find them dependable. They've owned them for, you know, half a century sometimes, and they really like them. The downside is they're very big, they're very heavy, and they're rather expensive. All that metal in that transformer, has price to be paid. Once upon a time, some smart person figured out that if you take the AC and ramp it up to to a higher frequency, you can get away with a much smaller transformer. It requires a lot less copper wire and a lot less iron, and will down the voltage to the same, you know, 13, 14, 15 volts. And then you can then apply all the previous smoothing and filtering and rectifying to get a smaller, lighter, cheaper power supply. So let me drop for a sec. The initial problem was that sometimes the increased frequency of the input was getting out of the box of the switching power supply and producing switching noises on your radio, and you would pick up these hums and all kinds of nasty noise. So if a switch power supply is poorly designed and badly filtered and shielded, then it's a pain in the backside. Or it could theoretically break at some point and bleed out the switching frequencies locally and interrupt your radio work. So a lot of old-timers who tried the earliest versions of switching power supplies have horror stories to tell of the noise and junk that those things would put out before they were made pretty foolproof. At this point, I have two power supplies. They're both switching power supplies. They both work wonderfully for me. I don't really perceive any significant noise coming out of them. They're smaller, they're lighter, and they were cheaper. So that's kind of the difference between the two.
Excellent description. I appreciate that. I get the idea now. So there's no downside on using a modern switching power supply from your description. And that's all I need to know. Thank you very much. I might chime in later, but I'll keep it light tonight. Thanks, Roy. KT2VHD, listening.
Okay, very good, Jim. Now, you guys out there, and I'm sure there's a couple of guys who really get annoyed when people promote switching power supplies, especially guys who like to hang out on 75 meters. So please, if there's anyone out there who would like to give an opposing position for the difference between a switching and linear power supply, feel free.
WA2VDH with a comment.
Yes, John.
Yes, actually, I have a little bit of a horror story. My next-door neighbor, this is going back about 6 or 7 years ago, my next-door neighbor had a laptop which had a switching supply on the plug-in to keep the battery charged, and she left it plugged in, and I was getting all kinds of 60-cycle related noise up and down the HF spectrum, centered mainly around 40 meters. It was definitely 60-cycle related because I took the audio from my receiver and put it on a scope, and the 60 cycles would stand still when I put it on line sync. I actually called somebody from LIPA, and he checked it out, and he found out that it seemed to peak right around my house, right around my next-door neighbor's house. So we finally narrowed it down by asking a few of our neighbors to throw their main breaker hood. Let me drop. To let a few of my neighbors throw their main breaker to see if it would disappear. And lo and behold, when my next door neighbor threw a breaker, it vanished. So I don't have a severe love of switches when they're used especially for receiving equipment. I'm sure nowadays they're probably much more shielded. But I have heard some horror stories involving photovoltaics where the inverter is pulse width modulated, and it causes some grief to some of the neighbors. Anyway, that's just my half cent for it.
Okay. When we get into discussions of what's causing electromagnetic pollution and RF noise, you know, I tend to go down the list, fluorescent bulb ballasts, which are becoming a thing of the past. Routers are getting a little bit better these days, but always I mention wall warts. Wall warts can be the Achilles heel of any purchase. Some companies will buy the cheapest wall warts, the power gizmos and gadgets. They're all using switching power supplies, again, because they're cheap and they're small, and people like cheap and small. So, yeah, with wall warts, it can be a problem because of quality issues and companies trying to cut corners. For amateur radio, though, I find personally, at least, the amateur radio-built switching power supplies are relatively well-designed, well-built, sturdy things. You're not going to find the same problems that you might find in just a random Chinese wall wart or charger for a low-cost laptop, shall we say. So, unfortunately, it is one of the modes that a switching power supply can go bad. But I was more speaking in terms of amateur radio, rated gear and such. And although some guys out there were bit by it 40, 50 years ago when it was just coming out, and don't want to give it a second chance, I'm here to say that, I use them, I like them, I haven't had any problems with them yet. If and when I do, I'll report back.
And thanks, Ian.
Yes, Wesley.
If you were to support the linear power supplies versus switching power supplies, what would you point in favor of it?
Well, there's less things to go wrong. It's built like a tank. It's about as heavy as a tank. You don't have to worry about timing circuits going bad or filtering capacitors going bad. So it's a little bit more bulletproof. Personally, I prefer the compromises of a switching. But like all things, they have things in their favor. Linear power supplies have things in their favor. I just think that switching power supplies have more things in their favor.
Okay, so in other words, you said that switching power supplies are much lighter, more efficient, durable, and have limited high-frequency noise due to its design. Well, you didn't say that. So for the reason switching power supplies are not suitable for high-frequency audio applications, but what else? What other applications those switching power supplies are not suitable for, Dr. Ray?
Well, I seem to remember you making a comment along those lines. For the use that I have, I don't run electron microscopes or somewhat esoteric devices. So for my uses, a switching power supply suits me. But I'm sure you have a piece of equipment that only works on a linear power supply.
That is correct. But I would like to... Is it playing devil as advocate, or is really pointing at the real truth about linear power supplies? Let me show you. So linear power supplies, they were, 1970s? Very popular. And then there was an advancement of switching power supply technology, and linear power supplies were less popular. But still... find themselves indispensable in applications that require the very low ripple and noise. So we have two factors. Also, linear power supply uses big transformer to drop voltage from AC line to much lower voltage, and then uses series of rectifier, which would be a grid bridge circuitry. There are four diodes, usually filtering process to produce a very clean DC voltage. Let me drop. That low voltage is then regulated into desired voltage level by dropping the difference in voltage across the transistor. That would be what IC shunt regulator usually use. Yeah. And typical application of linear power supplies is for, yes, my equipment, mostly studio mixers, audio amplifiers, low noise amplifier, signal processing, data acquisition. So anything that has sensors, multiplexers, analog digital converters, and sample and hold circuits must be power from linear power supplies.
Leslie?
Go ahead.
Well, you know, whenever you say everything, the generalizations tend to be generally incorrect. And I think this is a case of that. My Flex radio, God love it, it gets a switching power supply. And not only that, but I've talked to guys who made the Flex radio. They have built-in switching power supplies built into their circuitry. And, you know, I mean, ultimately, my Flex radio is one enormous analog-to-digital converter. So in some cases, you can get away with well-filtered switching power supplies for ADCs and DSPs and such.
Yeah, I must agree with that, Dr. Roy. You're absolutely right. A generalization is never truth and is misleading. But it is a certain standard. So we have a FCC giving us a standard. We have a UL listing, UL rated devices. They have a certain standard. And we have certain names of those standards that should be held into. So whenever we're dealing with automatic test equipment, lab test equipment, control circuits, anywhere that excellent regulation and low ripple is required, then we have not only a practice of using linear power supplies, but also standards that require them to be used. And the question is, why? Dr. Roy.
Well, again, ultimately the difference between the two technologies is one introduces more alternating current. It requires more finesse to do smoothing of the increased frequency of a switching power supply than it does a linear that just has the 60 hertz signal of the alternating current utility supply. So the plus for creating a high, 10, 100 kilohertz frequency is that you require a much smaller, more efficient transformer. The downside is you have to put in more effort to smooth the ripple as much as possible. I think that theoretically you could probably throw enough circuitry to produce a output as ripple-free in a switching power supply as a linear. It just would require a great deal more engineering, design, and components. But again, there's a case for both. And certainly in amateur radio, there is nothing that I'm aware of that requires a ripple-free, totally ripple-free power supply. So since I think the question was based upon Jim's interest in amateur radio, he's not going to be running any kind of esoteric machinery as far as I know.
Comment in one mighty way.
Yes.
Hi, Dr. Roy, Hank here. Years ago, I had an Acme Electric HF350 switching power supply, and I had to take it apart and replace the components that didn't behave properly. And I had the opportunity to compare it to the ICOM switching power supply that I have for my HF rig. And it was amazingly more complex in order for it to have such a ripple-free output or low-ripple output for a switching power supply. So I'm agreeing with your comment that more engineering will certainly do the job, even in a similar size package.
Thanks a lot, Hank. Good to hear you. Long time no hear. It's the nature of all new technology that you got to give people a little bit of time to kind of figure out what you can get away with and what you can't get away with. I have heard so many people who have stories about people who were burned by new technology and will never look back. This is I don't want to bring up a holy war,
but digital recording of music required the technicians to kind of think outside the box in order to provide the best acoustic material software that was made digitally. When they first did it, there was a tendency to have rather harsh recordings, and this kind of colored some people's opinion of the entire technology for decades, if not until today. Even digital high-definition television, it kind of revolutionized the makeup industry in Hollywood and other places, because makeup that you could get away with at 480 lines of resolution, you can't get away with 1080 or 4K or 8K. And so, you know, whenever any kind of technology is introduced, you have to give them a grace period, in my humble opinion, before you decide that it's a piece of garbage. Because otherwise, you'll just be one of those old cranky guys that everything invented after 1960 is a piece of garbage. But I thank you, Hank, for your input as well.
Okay, I have a few things to add.
Okay, Wesley?
We try to compare. Linear power supply has efficiency about 30 to 40%. And switch mode power supply is 70 to 95%. In terms of complexity, linear power supply, there is nothing there. It's a transformer, it's a grid bridge, it's a P filter. And, well, you may have a Zener diode there. If it's fixed, if it's not fixed, then you have some sort of voltage regulation system. Now, in terms of switching power supply, they are very much complex. The linear power supply well, good for EMI and have low noise. The switch mode power supply, they have a noise filtering the circuitry that often creates a lot of problems. Price. I believe that's the major factor, low price. So we're talking about switching power supplies, a very, very cheap versus a high power price due to the material of linear power supplies.
WB2EAV Mobile with a very quick comment.
Yes, Ed.
The counterintuitive fact that a very complicated switching power supply is actually cheaper than the much simpler linear supply is because the power transformer goes from this huge kludge to this tiny little thing, which is generating a very high frequency to go through the transformer. And the transformer is so much smaller that it more than makes up for all the additional costs, WB2EV.
Very good, Ed. I agree with you entirely. Wes, back to you.
I agree with that. We're not talking about superiority of one versus the other. We're talking about somebody living cheap, running cheap, and eating cheap. But that doesn't mean that the quality of that life is cheap. It depends from many factors. And we may have Africa where there is no need for high volume of heating, and there are plenty of factors that allows you to have a life at the same level as in America and spending less. So by that we may say that cheap is not always worse. Cheap means inexpensive often, but not always. So linear power supplies use power dissipation to achieve voltage regulation. A linear power supply must be designed to supply enough voltage to overcome... I'm sorry, I don't know if I'm being heard. Am I being heard, Dr. Roy?
Yes, you're being heard.
Okay. My antenna was in different position. I'm sorry. So, a linear power supply must... it may be strong enough to handle the input voltage while supplying maximal rated load current. There are some additional voltage drops in rectifiers, the linear regulator circuit, and the transformer. So we may say that the filter, the capacitors, the ripple voltage imposed on reflected AC, the lowest point of the ripple voltage must be higher than the minimum required for the regulator circuit. So there are many factors that says about how inconvenient is linear power supply. At the end, I stopped using switching power supplies a long time ago. I had so many of them, I switched, I damaged them with two Kenwood 2000s that I have, about four or five of them, and I've had the time to repair it. And John, KC2WGB, said once, life is too short for fixing stuff, just buy the new one. Dr. Roy.
Yeah, had all kinds of words of wisdom. I would tend to prefer saying that switching power supplies are less expensive or inexpensive. Maybe I've been sold too many things by pharmaceutical salespeople when I every so often say their products are cheap. Just as a joke. My power supply, I would not consider cheap. My power supply, I think, costs around the high 400s, the low 500s. It's capable of 60 amps of power. It has a adjustment knob and a couple of inputs, a couple of outputs, rather, front outputs and two back outputs, and it's been in use for 10 years and hasn't given me a bit of trouble. That includes not having any particular noise that I could discern. I also, as I mentioned, I have two switching power supplies. I have another one that is designed in a curiously different way. It actually has an adjuster for the frequency of the high-frequency kilocycle oscillator that feeds into the transformer, so that if for some reason you find that you're getting frequency spurs because of the rate of the high frequency rate of the input to the transformer, you can actually turn a little knob and change the oscillation frequency somewhat to take it off that particular frequency. I've never had to use that feature, by the way.
KD2WOT.
Yes, Chris.
Yeah, just a quick comment. I mean, the biggest practical application, really, for the switching power supplies is portable electronics, like a laptop, for example. With, you know, today's laptops, with the, you know, the power that they demand, and, you know, the weight ratio, I mean, you would have to have a linear power supply that weighed twice as much as the laptop.
Well, yeah, but I think generally, especially for the public, and not for us amateurs who have a power supply that runs their radio equipment, but people who buy little gadgets that require 5 volts or 6 volts or 9 volts or 12 volts and what have you, they're all wall warts, they're all switching, they're all inexpensively made small, light, non-obtrusive. You know, if you had to switch all those things to linear designs, you'd be moving boat anchors all over the place. So it's not only, in my opinion, mobile devices, but routers require a wall wart. Wi-Fi's require a wall wart. There's a lot of little gadgets and devices that they put that plug into a base of some kind that are powered by a nearby wall wart. I mean, my wireless telephone has a wall wart. So they're used for all manner of things these days. And because of the relative quality issues have been figured out, except for moderate small you know, cases where people cheap out, or just the quality issues in the factory. But they're all over the place. You know, try and find a wall wart that's basically a linear a power supply. You won't find any, at least not, I haven't, in a long, 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 long time.
I agree. It's the amount of iron, I mean, they should have to carry, you know, the size of a transformer to give you, you know, 6 or 8 amps at, you know, 20, 25 volts.
Yeah, transformers are much more efficient as the frequency of the alternating current goes up. So 60 hertz was not possibly the best design just as part of a power supply assembly. So, you know, in the old days, putting a lot of power through an inexpensive, stable oscillator was not that easy. Nowadays, with field effects transistors, they're continue to making strides. I think about 4 or 5 months ago I mentioned there are field effects transformers that are using gallium nitride. Perhaps it's related to the blue LED uses where it allows a great deal of power to be used in a very small contained area. So you'll notice wall warts, basically, that have shrunk in size dramatically since they were first introduced. You know, anyone with a memory of an iPhone remembers the size of the model of the charging wall wart when the first iPhone came out, and now look at the ones that are coming out now. They're a quarter, or a fifth, a sixth of the volume. So they keep on building up the technology. I think it's a great technology in general. Again, there are special cases where it might not be suitable, but I think for amateur radio, it's a wonderful device, and I use it without any problem.
Oh, ZDH with a comment.
Yes, John.
Yeah, the ones that are going to give you grief are the non-amateur radio-related switchers. Most of the switching supplies that are for ham radio equipment are going to be well designed. At least they're going to be cognizant of the fact that hey, we don't want to be our customers picking up the harmonics of their own supply. I will tell you one interesting problem I had. I do a lot of very low frequency listening, and once in a while I'll check around for some RIDI signals that I can monitor down there. And I have one of those teletype decoders from Universal Shortwave. They used to be, I think, in Ohio. But anyway, the monitor for it, it's an old Magnavox monitor. And as I'm tuning around, down around 30, 40, 50 kilohertz, sometimes I pick up the sweep frequency for the harmonic of the sweep frequency. So that is another related problem. But as I say, most of the amateur-related switches are going to be decent. They're going to have good filtering. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, the unfortunate reality is we get most of our stuff from China these days, and China has a lot of significant quality assurance issues. Now, usually when they're exported and other companies are using their own identity and brand name, like Apple, they are very strict and the quality is incredibly high. But in cases where they slap on a make-believe brand name that they came up with last Wednesday and ship out some inexpensive receivers, I can see them, you know, putting them together with wall warts that they got really cheap someplace from some unknown supplier. So, yeah, it's possible, especially with some Chinese companies, to kind of come up short. But again, what Jim was really discussing was the aspects of amateur radio, which I think is a different population group, the different worries and concerns. I mean, I'm sort of amazed that I have a lot of wall warts that don't spew RF, you know, from Chinese things, little dinky gizmos like rotating illuminated displays and light displays and, you know, cheap little tchotchkes. And I've, you know, tried them around the radio, and surprisingly, no real noise. So maybe I'm just lucky.
Have you listened to around low frequency or very low frequency?
Well, no. That's probably why I haven't noticed. Nothing kind of reaches into the harmonics of any band that I poke around on.
Yeah, well, that's the way it should be. I mean, if you go looking for it, like in some cases I have, down around 30, 40, 50, 60 kilohertz, you'll find it. It may not be very strong, but you can hear a beat note. But as you say, as you get up into HF, if its design is good, it should really drop away.
Yeah, if you're a loafer, a guy really into low frequencies, that might be something that might concern you. Again, I don't think most well-filtered, reasonably priced switching power supplies will have a significant part of that, but cheaper kind of commodity switching power supplies, if you're near their switching frequency, again, you might pick something up because... What really concerns me and most other people are the harmonics of those frequencies. Most of us don't venture that close to DC on our radios, but I could understand the curiosity and the interest.
10-1-YDY.
Yes, thanks.
May I make a comment about transformers' efficiency and noises at the low frequencies?
Sure.
So when airplanes, when the jet age first started in the late 50s, but by the early 60s, by the time they figured out what they were actually doing with the electrical system in airplanes, they moved from either 24 or 48 volts to 208, 117, 208, three-phase, 400 cycle circuit or 400 hertz electricity, and they did it primarily for two reasons. One was efficiency of power distribution. The other is weight reduction because the transformers all got a lot smaller. And the third, which was sort of a side effect, a happy side effect, was that the amount of noise that was transmitted into other aircraft circuits greatly went down because they were able to filter it out much more easily.
God, that's interesting. I never really thought in terms of airplane power supplies. I wonder, theoretically, if there's any big limitation for a higher alternating current frequency for utility power lines, whether, you know, they just decided on 60 and 50 hertz just because it seemed like a good number. At one point, they were thinking in terms of synchronizing clocks or something through it. But I wonder if there's a limitation that, you know, if we were starting from scratch tomorrow, if we could build a utility electrical grid that operated at 300 hertz instead of 60.
Well, actually, for some industrial applications, electricity is delivered at 400 hertz.
Ah, very good. Do you know if it's delivered through the utility company or it's kind of goes through a device to modify it near the factories and businesses?
I'm sorry, I really don't know the answer to that. What I do know is that it's available in all major airports. I'm not talking about the type that are small, but if you're talking about JFK, LaGuardia, Detroit, things like that, it's available in the hangars, right out of the wall sockets.
Oh, that's good to know. I have no idea whatsoever. It seems to me, though, to be a kind of a slightly bad idea. If you're going to have an aeronautic standard of 300 hertz, and then the airport's surroundings has a 400 hertz utility. I wonder if that can confuse electronics any.
I think I might have misspoken if you think it's 300 hertz. The airplane is 400 hertz, but it's three phase. So there's a three phase alternator, and all the motors are three phase.
Okay, I'm sorry. I must have misunderstood. Yeah, that makes a lot more sense. So that the electronics that's used in the airplanes can be plugged in through a local power supply at the airport. That makes a great deal of sense. Very good. So you learn something new every day.
KD2WOT.
Yes, Chris?
Yeah, just, a little bit more on that comment. In IBM, the large systems and the water-cooled systems we used to have, and we had a motor generator that used to produce 415 hertz, 208 at, 415 for the system.
Oh, okay, that's interesting to know as well. You kind of grow up thinking that everything in the United States is 60 hertz, everything in Europe is 50 hertz, just because people have to be different, and I was unaware of the different frequencies of utility power, so it's something to look into more when I have the time. There's a lot of science history that's funny as heck between General Electric and Thomas Edison. The pull back and forth between utilities providing electricity via direct current versus alternating current. And, there are stories, and I think there are photographs. There might be video, movie type of recording of Thomas Edison putting on a show where he basically electrocuted a poor elephant. So those are fascinating stories of the battle. If things went the other way, our utility lines would be direct current, I guess. It only goes to show history is interesting.
Yeah, I just wanted to clear it up. The utility didn't supply that. The utility supplied the standard 60 hertz, but there was a machine called a motor generator, which operated a motor and it was a generator, and it basically changed the frequency of the current to 415.
Yeah, I kind of assumed that. Generators aren't that difficult to change their timing and provide any relative variation of 60 hertz you might want to. I didn't think that IBM had enough juice to get utility lines to give them special lines at off frequencies. But still, it's kind of interesting because I think most people think of 60 hertz as the thing in this country, the same way you talk to someone from Europe and they think of 50 hertz as, that's the utility power. That's what you deal with.
VDH would comment.
Yes, John.
I remember years ago, I'm talking back in the late 50s, I remember a lot of, I think some of the subway systems in downtown New York City, not all of them, but only a couple of the stations, I think they used a lower frequency on some of their lighting. And I remember even some of the incandescent bulbs at that time. I was a mere kid, but I remember some of the incandescent bulbs would show a noticeable flicker, or only on certain stations in lower Manhattan, down around Chambers Street, Cortlandt Street area. And I think they used a lower frequency. I think they used 25 hertz. I'm not sure, but I think I remember hearing that from somewhere.
Okay, that's an interesting one. It's a shame we don't have any train historians out there listening tonight. That would be weird for me, at least, because as far as I'm aware, there was no standard 25. I mean, they might have gotten some European design that was built into 50 hertz and such, but 25 hertz. Okay. We'll look that up. Google is our friend.
KD2WOT. Yeah, just another thing. Many buildings in Manhattan, I think, below Canal Street, and certainly one in Brooklyn, I know, was DC. We used to have to change motors out of equipment to put in DC motors because everything came with the standard. that was back in the 70s, you know, mid-70s.
KW.
Yes, KW.
Yeah, I too have solved in D.C. in lower Manhattan, but I don't think the subways were 25 hertz. I think that flickering light was pulsating D.C. over.
No, this wasn't. Hey, yeah, that's a possibility. Again, I got to Google it, but I haven't been keeping up on my subway history.
This wasn't the subway lighting. It was the lighting in the stations, some of the lighting in the stations.
I remember the fluorescent blue bulbs. I think it had argon and blue bulbs. You used to be able to put them on your phone line, and when the phone rang, the bulb would blink because the ring on the phone was 90 volts pulsating DC. And the bulb would ionize with the DC. I believe that the flicker was tall. I could be wrong. I don't know. I've never been an electrician. I've never worked on the subway. It was a long time ago. I certainly rode them. I'm older than I sound, over.
Comment. Yes, comment away.
K2GJE, the original lighting on the subway was DC 5 lamps in series taken off the third rail, over.
Okay, I took the opportunity during the pause to do a quick Google, and apparently Amtrak did have a 25 hertz traction power system. So I'm not sure if the New York subway system ever experimented with that, but Amtrak certainly did.
Bonjour.
Say again, I think that was you, Rich?
It was. Is my signal really poor tonight?
No, it's okay, but for some odd reason, it didn't come across until halfway through what you transmitted.
Ah, okay. Just two things. One thing's a question and one thing's a comment. First, the comment. Hank, I was actually thinking about Hank over the just yesterday because there's a program on CNBC called American Greed. I don't know if anybody's seen it. And it's about con artists and drug dealers and guys who make millions of dollars, you know, just outside the law. And I was shocked to see that they had a whole hour on American Greed about the Boeing Max program, that they would lump in Boeing with drug dealers and con artists. It was really an eye opener for me, and they really went after them, and as I think should be. But it's funny, I was thinking of Hank because the last time we talked, it was just about the two crashes of the, I think at 800 max, was it? Let me let it drop a second. Yeah, it was a max. Yeah, again, to see this program right alongside of, or sandwiched in between, one kid who was making Nazis and some other con artists, and to see Boeing right in the middle of them, that's how bad this thing was. Anyway, the other question is, as you know, Roy, I have an RSP-1A, which is a little black box. It's a SDR receiver, not a transceiver, it's a receiver. And it plugs into the, you know, standard 5-volt power supply, that little wall wart, I guess we could say now, that is ubiquitous with cell phones. And I just wonder how much noise do you think something as cheap as that is introducing into the receiver? Go ahead.
Well, again, it's kind of a function of how much money they spent on designing the electronics and the filtering and the shielding. Theoretically, you could make it so that it shouldn't give you much of any problem. But again, quality issues can be affected. If it's a standard 5-volt wall wart, I think most of us have accrued a couple of draw full of 5-volt wall warts. So, you know, you could try different ones and see if the background noise pattern changes at all. You know, as we were talking earlier tonight, it'll be much more noticeable at the very, very, very low end of the frequency range, where not too many harmonics have to be multiplied before you pick up the signal. But I don't think it's significant. If it is, then it's a faulty power supply.
May I comment in one more, anyway?
Certainly, Hank.
Okay, for the first thing he was talking about, the Boeing, if you want to give me an email at my call sign, n1ydy@yahoo.com, I've got a couple of comments I'll make to you, but not on the air, about Boeing. And secondly, about the small power supplies, I have to agree with Roy. There's a major difference. I went sniffing around my room one time. I had a lot of noise, and I found that an Apple power supply, one of the original iPhone-style large ones, was generating a lot of noise, and the Samsung one that I had next to it, with the same nominal output and all the rest of that, was quiet. And what I used for a detector was an old AM radio and a coil of wire, and it was amazing the difference between one and the other.
USB ports.
In terms of what, Rich? Because USB ports are just power lines. They work using the same system of a switching power supply, and they just feed the 5-volt through the USB pin.
USB ports in terms of noise also. That's what I was talking about. Do you think the USB ports coming out of a computer are picking up the computer clocks and things like that subaudibly?
Well, again, I would imagine a very cheaply done device might do that. And I've had some cheap devices, but I haven't really seen any of that in an obvious sort of way. Again, most of these things use very sophisticated chips, very sophisticated circuits. There's all kinds of safety features that are built into relatively cheap chips these days. So that, you know, in the old days, it was theoretically possible for a power line to give you a lot more than 5 volts and burn up your computer. I think I still see every so often these hacking types show the design of USB header killers. And that basically, they just pulse high voltage through their lines, and they short out the integrated circuit that does the translations and such. But again, I haven't experienced it personally, and I've used some of the cheapest hubs imaginable.
What's the difference between a USB hub that's not powered and one that is powered?
Well, I could be goofy and say that the difference is that they're powered. But ultimately, yeah, the difference is that they're powered. You can provide power to a USB device one of two ways. You could use the power coming from the computer's USB port and pass it through multiple hubs and overheat, and eventually you will draw so much power that your computer will probably put up a little sign that says you are drawing too much current for this device, and eventually the device will reset and turn off until it cools down. Whereas if you're smart about it and you know that you're going to plug in a couple of things that are going to draw real power, you know, like a USB camera or a scanner or all kinds of fun stuff. Then you get a powered hub, which has its own power supply, so that you don't have to rely on the power supply from the computer's USB port, which is